Geoffrey Richards investigates the little grey cells of Hercule Poirot in The Radio Detectives.
We present John Moffat as Hercule Poirot and André Marin as Monsieur Bouc in Agatha Christie's Murder on the Orient Express.
Hercule Poirot, the diminutive Belgian detective, is one of the most popular creations of the undisputed mistress of crime fiction, Dame Agatha Christie. But there could be few characters more decisively removed from the archetypal detective of the golden age of crime fiction, the well-bred, languid gentleman amateur epitomised by Lord Peter Wimsey.
Poirot was an extraordinary-looking little man. He was hardly more than 5 feet 4 inches, but carried himself with great dignity. His head was exactly the shape of an egg, and he always perched it a little on one side. His moustache was very stiff and military. The neatness of his attire was almost incredible. I believe a speck of dust would have caused him more pain than a bullet wound. Yet this quaint, dandified little man, who I was sorry to see now limped badly, had been, in his time, one of the most celebrated members of the Belgian police. As a detective, his flair had been extraordinary, and he had achieved triumphs by unravelling some of the most baffling cases of the day.
Dame Agatha's description of her detective on his first appearance in 1920 in The Mysterious Affair at Stiles. Why did she choose, of all nationalities, a Belgian as her detective? She recalled his creation in her autobiography.
Who could I have as a detective? A schoolboy? Rather difficult. A scientist. What did I know of scientists? Then I remembered our Belgian refugees. We had quite a colony of Belgian refugees living in the parish of Tours. Why not make my detective a Belgian, I thought. There were all types of refugees. How about a refugee police officer? A retired police officer, not too young a one. What a mistake I made there. The result is that my fictional detective must really be well over 100 by now. Anyway, I settled on a Belgian detective. I allowed him slowly to grow into his part. He should have been an inspector, so that he would have had a certain knowledge of crime. He would be meticulous. A tidy little man, always arranging things, liking things in pairs, liking things square instead of round. And he should be very brainy. He should have little grey cells of the mind. That was a good phrase. I must remember that. Yes. He would have little grey cells.
A confirmed bachelor, Poirot set up as a private detective in London, living in the elegant Art Deco surroundings of flat 203 Whitehaven Mansions, with a devoted secretary, Miss Lemon, and a faithful manservant, George. He had a fondness for good food, and, despite a tendency to sea and air sickness, for luxury travel to such exotic locations as Egypt, Palestine, Turkey, and Mesopotamia, where he invariably encountered murder. In investigating these murders, he made a point of assembling all the available information.
To begin with, I should like a plan of the Istanbul Cali coach with a note of the people who occupy the compartments, and I should also like to see their tickets and their passports.
Michel, will you see to that, please?
Of course, Monsieur Bouc.
Now, what other passengers are on the train?
Eh bien, in the Athens coach, Dr. Constantine and I are the only travelers. Mm-hmm. Beyond that are the ordinary carriages, but they do not concern us, since they were locked off from this part of the train after dinner had been served last night. Mm-hmm. And forward of the Istanbul-Cali coach is only the dining car.
Then it seems as though we must look for our murderer in the Istanbul-Cali coach.
At half an hour after midnight, we ran into the snowdrift. No one can have left the train since then.
So, we have established two things. The murderer is with us still on the train, and he or she is a passenger on the Istanbul-Calais coach.
Poirot believed that by the deployment of sanity, logic, order and method, the truth could be uncovered.
I wish you'd tell me about your methods, Monsieur Poirot. The point about the fire, for instance.
Oh, that was very simple. You leave Mr. Aykroyd at 9:10, was it not?
Yes, exactly, I should say.
Now, the window at that time is closed and bolted and the door unlocked. At 10:15, when the body is discovered, the door is locked, and the window is open. Who opened it? Well, clearly only Mr. Aykroyd himself could have done so, and for one of two reasons. Either because he was unbearably hot, or because he admitted someone that way. Now, we know from the excellent Parker that the fire was nearly out, so he must have opened the window to let someone in, someone known to him.
Put like that, it sounds so simple.
Ah, Here is the good Inspector Davis.
That telephone call has been traced. It did not come from here. It was put through to Dr. Shepherd at 10:15 last night from a public call box at King's Abbott Station. Seems no rhyme or reason in the thing.
Ah, be sure, Inspector, there was a reason.
But what reason could it be?
When we know that, we shall know everything. This case is very curious and very interesting.
Poirot starred in 33 books, 56 short stories, and one play. The play was Black Coffee, and it was recently novelized by Charles Osborne, author of The Life and Crimes of Agatha Christie. What did he learn about her writing strength from this process?
Well, I think her principal strength lies, of course, in the sheer complexity of her plots, the puzzle. Characterization was fairly simple, but the plots were so complex and the puzzles were always pretty good and pretty difficult to solve. So far as the actual dialogue was concerned, it was pretty straightforward, pretty plain. It went where it wanted to go. There was no messing about, and it went only as far as she wanted it to go. She was very, very careful about what she made her characters say, and very, very often, of course, the solution to the puzzle would depend upon the reader's interpretation of something a character said. So she was very careful about that indeed.
The success of Poirot on the printed page led inevitably to his translation into other media, notably the stage and film. But continual liberties have been taken with his appearance. There were three low-budget British films in the 1930s with Austin Trevor as a tall, clean-shaven Poirot.
He wasn't, of course, at all like Poirot. He was a tall man. And from what Christie herself said, he made no attempt to characterize Poirot. He didn't even give him a French accent, I believe. So I don't think he could have been very effective, and indeed she didn't care for him at all.
On stage, in the 1920s and 1930s, Charles Laughton and Francis L. Sullivan played Poirot, but as a large, bulky figure, rather than the diminutive dandy of the books. Francis L. Sullivan, known to his friends as Larry, became a personal friend of Dame Agatha, as he recalled in a 1955 interview.
It was in 1928 that I first played Monsieur Poirot in a touring company of Alibi, and it was through this that a couple of years later I made my first West End success in the same part in Black Coffee, and I again played him for a third time in Peril End House in 1940. Although I met Mrs. Christie at rehearsals and we had got on very well, I did not get to know her really intimately until the end of the war, when I approached her to write another play for me. On one of her weekend visits, I had an excellent chance to observe at least the outward manifestations of the creative phase of her work. At the back of the house, my wife, in a moment of insane optimism over the English weather, had caused a swimming pool to be made with half a dozen paths leading down to it through the chestnut woods. And one fine Sunday morning, I discovered Agatha wandering up and down these paths with an expression of intense concentration. So I left her to it and dived into the pool. The sequel came about a year later when there arrived one day a copy of The Hollow with the printed dedication to Larry and Annie, with apologies for using their pool as the scene of a murder.
Poirot made his radio debut in America in 1939 when Orson Welles starred in an adaptation of The Murder of Roger Ackroyd for the Campbell Playhouse series on CBS. Welles demonstrated his legendary versatility by playing both the narrator, Dr. Shepherd, and the celebrated Belgian sleuth.
Who are you?
You call yourself, unfortunate man, an inspector of police, and you say to me, who am I? Hercule Poirot, master detective, possessed of the finest brain in Europe, known in every continent, in every land, nay, in every city.
Not in my part of the world, you ain't. I never heard of you.
I vouch for Monsieur Poirot, Inspector. He's miles the phone call came, Mr. Ackroyd's death.
Well, all right then. He can stay. But this is my case, and don't you forget it. All right. When was Mr. Ackroyd last seen alive?
Mr. Ackroyd was certainly alive at 9:30. I heard him in here talking.
Who to, Mr. Raymond?
I don't know. I just heard his voice. But I know it was 9:30.
You didn't hear any of their conversation, did you, Mr. Raymond?
I did catch a fragment of it. It did strike me as a trifle odd.
Remember, please, the words exact. It is very important.
I'd swear under oath the exact words were, the calls on my purse have been so frequent of late that I find it impossible to accede to your request.
Thank you, Mr. Raymond.
Then from 1945 to 1947, on the Mutual Broadcasting System, American character actor Harold Huber played Poirot in a series of stories which were introduced to American listeners via shortwave by Agatha Christie herself.
I feel this is an occasion that would have appealed to Hercule Poirot. He would have done justice to the inauguration of this radio program and he might even have made it seem something of an international event. However, he's heavily engaged on an investigation about which you will hear in due course.
Monsieur Poirot, it's been a privilege to know you. I'm only sorry I couldn't remain to see you break the case.
But you have, monsieur.
I beg your pardon?
The case, it is broken. Inspector, meet Hilary Kent, the gentleman to whom you have just wished bon voyage.
Hilary Kent? You're a mad, Poirot.
Gracious, I thought he was Paris.
And that wooden crate, which I have waited so long to see, it is not to be moved, Inspector.
Why not?
Because, mon ami, it contains the body of Jonathan Parrish.
Harold Huber in The Case of the Careless Victim, the first story in the American series. In 1956, the BBC Light programme mounted a three-week Agatha Christie season, which included five Poirot plays, written and produced by the corporation's top dramatic talent, and featuring five different Poirots, with the role played respectively by Austin Trevor, Kenneth Kent, Jacques Brunius, John Gabriel, and Cyril Shapps. Sadly, the British have consistently paid less attention to the preservation of their radio crime fiction heritage than the Americans, and nothing remains in the archive of any of these productions. Poirot's cinema career really only took off in 1974, when a miscast Albert Finney played Poirot in the first of a series of spectacular all-star Christie adaptations, Murder on the Orient Express. Finney was succeeded in the role by the altogether more satisfactory Peter Ustinov in Death on the Nile.
I am the nasty little eavesdropper, madame. I heard that you much admire these pearls, that you would give every tooth in your head to possess them. It is my theory that you have an obsessive love of jewelry, madame, that you coveted Madame Doyle's pearls, and that you determined to possess them even if this meant robbery or murder. You do not deny it, madame.
You will withdraw that, or I shall prosecute you for slander with the utmost vigor.
It will not equal the vigor with which I shall search this boat, and in particular your cabin, madame, for those pearls. I give you a good afternoon.
You perfectly foul French upstart.
Belgian upstart, please, madame.
But like Lawton and Sullivan, Ustinov could hardly be described as diminutive. It was television which, by common consent, provided the perfect visual incarnation of Poirot in David Suchet, who made his debut in the long-running LWT series in 1989. Charles Osborne.
He at least was more like the right size of Poirot, and he's a very good actor, and he was able to make himself look reasonably like Poirot as well, which was in a way something that the Ustinovs and the Finneys didn't attempt all that much. I don't think there was ever a comment from Agatha Christie. She may well have been dead before Suchet began to play Poirot. I'm pretty sure she would have liked his performance.
Thank you, Miss Lemon. You may now go back to your filing. Miss Lemon dreams of the perfect filing system, besides which all other filing systems will sink into oblivion. This morning she is close to the breakthrough. Now, what brings you to consult Hercule Poirot?
I think David Suchet is terrific. Absolutely wonderful.
Radio producer Enid Williams.
There have been, and to some extent still are, other Poirots who visually, for me, don't work. But I think Suchet is absolutely stunning. And I think everything about his mannerisms, his little walk, the way he uses his hands, is so superbly observed.
At the same time as Suchet was creating the definitive screen Poirot, the definitive radio Poirot was emerging in the person of John Moffat in a series of radio dramatizations of the novels produced by Enid Williams. Her association with the character began in 1986 with a production of Hercule Poirot's Christmas, in which Peter Sallis played Poirot.
You were in the little ballroom, I think, when Mr. Lee was killed.
That's right.
You did not hear the scream, I think you said.
Don't think I did. Somebody did cry out, but that may have been somebody downstairs.
You did not hear a noise like this?
What do you think you're doing? Do you want to scare the whole house? They'll think somebody else has been killed.
No, it's just... it's just a little experiment, Mr. Farr, but let us continue. You were, I think, the first person to arrive on the scene that night.
Was I? I don't remember. No, I think one of the ladies was here before me.
Which lady?
One of the wives, George's wife or David's.
What's going on?
It is nothing, nothing. Do not be alarmed. A little experiment that
I
made.
Why is everybody rushing about? What's going on?
You were with the senorita?
Yes.
And you did not hear me scream?
Not a sound.
That is all I wanted to know. You may all go now.
That's the trouble with these chaps from across the channel. Quite unstable.
I enjoyed very much working with Peter Sallis. I think he's a terrific actor. But he's not a very happy person doing accents. And we decided to leave it there. So with some inspiration, I rang John Moffat and asked him if he would come and do it. And he has absolutely made Poirot, I think, in radio, totally, utterly his own. And it is his meticulous command of the English language that is partly so helpful to his meticulous characterization of Poirot. To his own wonderful English voice, he adds this Belgian accent. And in the studio, he's even doing the little Poirot gestures. The way he touches his script is very delicate and sort of Poirot-esque, you might almost say.
Christie expert Charles Osborne agrees about the casting of John Moffat.
I think he's very good indeed. Vocally, which is all that matters, of course, on radio, he is absolutely right, I think. He gets to the heart of the character. He doesn't mess around with it, and he's a very good actor as well. I think he is really a very fine Poirot.
Are you certain that Mademoiselle de Belfort did not recover it before she left the saloon?
Yes, I'm certain.
Then we arrive at this point. When Mademoiselle de Belfort leaves the room, the pistol is under the settee. And since she was not left alone at any time, that is correct?
Yes, that is correct.
She had no opportunity to get back the pistol after she had left the saloon. Then, in that 15 minutes, someone removes the pistol from where it lay out of sight under the settee. It seems highly probable that the person who took it was the murderer of Madame Doyle.
John Moffat has been playing Poirot on radio since 1987, in 10 productions to date. What does he think is the key to Poirot's appeal?
Of the male detectives, I think he's probably the kindest, the gentlest. He hasn't got the acidity, as it were, of Sherlock Holmes, or the offhandedness and rudeness of a lot of the fictional detectives. He's a very gentle, kindly, fastidious, sometimes almost sentimental man, with a very, very penetrating mind, of course. And everyone, of course, imagines Poirot as being this little, short, fat, round, bald-headed man with these big moustaches and his fastidiousness. He's just so quaint and extraordinary.
Monsieur Poirot?
Miss Ball?
No. No, that is not quite right. It is not Miss Bourne, is it, my child? But Mrs. Ralph Payton.
Yes. Oh, there, my dear. It'll be all right. You'll see, everything will be all right. This is very weak and silly of me.
No, my child. We can all realize the strain of this last week.
It must have been a terrible ordeal.
I saw this in the paper this morning. It says that Ralph has been arrested, so I need not pretend any longer.
All the same, I think you will do well to make a clean breast of things. So you will tell me the whole story, will you not? If I am to save your husband, I must know all there is to know.
How does John Moffat go about creating the character in purely vocal terms?
With radio, you have to absorb the character completely. You have to hold an image of him in your mind. Remember that he's, as I've said, small, plump, that he has these large moustaches, and that he has this extreme fastidiousness. He's very pernickety, very neat, very tidy, very careful about everything. And to a certain extent, you can get all this into your voice. You can certainly get the fastidiousness into your voice, and it often helps to make little fastidious gestures, to just to touch the moustache, or examine the fingernails. Some tiny little gesture like that will communicate with the voice, and I think will come over.
The accent is obviously an important part of the characterization.
The difference between French and Belgian, of course, is very subtle and very slight, and it depends whereabouts you are in France and whereabouts you are in Belgium. But it was about 10 years ago that Enid Williams, the director, rang me and said, I want you to play Hercule Poirot, and I was very pleased. But I said, but Enid, how do you know that I can do a Belgian accent? And very flatteringly she said, you can do anything. But I'm not going to pretend that there is a very great deal of difference between a Belgian accent and a French accent, because I don't think there is.
Ah, mon cher ami, how good of you to come and meet me.
Oh, I thought that was what you expected.
I have succeeded beyond all expectations.
Congratulations. Mm-hmm. Have you heard the latest here?
How could I possibly hear anything?
We must go up to the villa at once. Hmm? There has been another murder.
Another murder? Ah, then all my ideas are wrong. I have failed. It demolishes my theory. It ruins everything. Ah, no, no, it is impossible. I cannot be wrong. Unless...
Unless what?
Unless the victim is a man of middle age, his body was found in the locked shed near the scene of the crime and had been dead at least 48 hours.
Oh, you're pulling my leg. You've heard all about it already.
Would I do such a thing? No, I assure you that I have heard nothing whatsoever.
Then how on earth can you know that?
I was right then. The little grey cells, they told me.
Now we play a sort of game in that Michael Bakewell, who does the adaptations for radio, and Enid Williams, between them, decide not to put a line about the little grey cells into the script. It's left to me to find the best place for it, and I have great pleasure in doing that, surprising them at the first reading. Of course, sometimes Agatha does use it, but she doesn't use it anything like as much as people think.
The Poirot novels have all been directed for radio by Enid Williams.
We work in a very concentrated way, but with extreme lightness of touch, which I think is terribly important. And Enid has this ability to create this atmosphere in which everybody wants to work, because it's all so enjoyable. And I think one has to remember, of course, that these Poirot stories, they are entertainments, and so they should be fun to do and fun to listen to, even though they usually are about murder. And Enid is one of the best of all radio directors, and very, very experienced and accomplished, and an extremely nice lady. Always in the last scene, there's a big confrontation, isn't there, when he gathers everybody together in the library, and there's a scene in which he explains what has happened and eventually unmasks the criminal. When we come to this scene, and it always arranges it so that I sit alone in one part of the studio and the other actors are all in not a semicircle but a kind of arc in front of me, which is very intimidating for me. And at that point, all the frivolity disappears and it becomes very schoolmistressly and says, now, no more laughter, no more jokes, absolute concentration. This is a very, very important scene. I'm putting you all on your mettle. And there's a moment of silence, and then we start. And I like this. It helps me a lot.
I think that it is time now that we assembled all the passengers together.
I will ask Michel to arrange it.
Ah, yes, Michel. It is essential that he is there, too.
Michel? You mean he, too, is involved in this? Oh, it is impossible. Where will it all end?
Mesdames et messieurs, we are here, as you know, to investigate the killing of Samuel Edward Ratchet Cassetti. I have considered the matter very carefully, and I have come to the conclusion that there are two possible explanations of the crime.
Two?
I shall put both of them before you, and I shall ask Monsieur Bouc and Dr. Constantine here to judge which solution is the right one.
Enid Williams has been able to assemble some truly remarkable casts for her productions.
Enid is extremely good at getting very good casts together. And I think that because there have been so many all-star movies, it's now perfectly acceptable for actors and actresses who are really leading actors and actresses to feel quite happy about playing parts in Agatha Christie thrillers. I mean, on the Orient Express, we had Joss Ackland and Sean Phillips and Francesca Annis and Frank Windsor and Sylvia Sims, a whole lot of really marvellous actors and actresses.
One of the attractions of the stories is their period flavour. How did Enid Williams go about evoking this?
In television, obviously, they create the period with the right cars, with having no television aerials showing and all that sort of thing. And we do as we can with that in radio. Also, the actual dramatizations are quite clear in language. Perhaps you might say almost more pedantic than the way people would speak today. If there's any music in the background, naturally, we use period music and all that sort of thing. I tried to think of a piece of music that would be right as a sig tune for Poirot, but I realised that because he goes so much all over the place, I mean, he's always travelling abroad and that kind of thing, in a way that Miss Marple doesn't do to the same extent. I know Miss Marple's been to the Caribbean and all those sorts of things, but Poirot's always round and about. So I decided the best thing with Poirot was to choose individual music depending upon the setting. So with Lord Edgware Dies, a great deal of which happens in a very sort of swish London hotel, I decided to use Putting on the Ritz. And then with Death on the Nile and Murder in Mesopotamia, we used music with a sort of Eastern influence to it. With Murder on the Orient Express, I have a great joy of working frequently with a most wondrously gifted musician called Michael Haslam. And Michael and I both felt very much that we wanted a feel of a train. And so he composed wonderful music that's just eternally, you have this feeling that the train is just about to go. And then he was terribly clever, of course, at the end of the very last episode when the train does move. He wrote the music so that with the closing announcements of the last episode, so the train moves on.
Although Agatha Christie eventually tired of Poirot, and in the end killed him off, the public shows no sign of tiring of him, and that is the ultimate measure of memorability.
In Agatha Christie's Murder on the Orient Express, John Moffat played Hercule Poirot and André Maran, Monsieur Bouc. The music was composed and performed by Michael Haslam. Murder on the Orient Express was dramatized by Michael Bakewell and directed by Enid Williams.
The Radio Detectives was written and presented by Professor Geoffrey Richards, with additional research by Jane Gibson. The producer was Helen Williams. Next week, the wisdom of Miss Marple.